When was your last checkup? No, not you. Although that's important, too. But when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Chevy Drive Chicago. Schedule a service appointment at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer.
I would like to use today to bring in a guest who's been on our show before, Joe Feldman. He is the founder and president of Cover My Mental Health. It's a nonprofit here in Chicago area doing all kinds of great work, helping people, patients and their families overcome insurance obstacles. Thank you so much for joining us again.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And, you know, your organization really just is so helpful to people. And I know that there's an event coming up and I want to plug it right now and plug it again a couple of times. Tell us about the event that's going on this week.
Sure. So on Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock in Wilmette, NAMI, which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness, their affiliate, who is based in the northern suburbs, is going to host my giving a talk where I'll describe the resources of Cover My Mental Health to help patients and their families overcome obstacles to care. It'll be in Wilmette at the First Congregational Church.
And that's on your website. If you go to covermymentalhealth.org, that's on the website. And you can always call me or email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com, and I'd be happy to send you a link to the event, which should prove to be very helpful. Not only, I mean, for you focus on the issue of coverage for mental health, which is a subsection, of course, of full health insurance, but some of the same things that you advocate for and that you train and that you advise have to do with all kinds of health insurance, right?
Well, actually, all of our resources are relevant for all aspects of medical care, whether mental health or physical health. We focus on mental health and substance use disorder because the obstacles there are so frustrating and seemingly insurmountable for families who are in the middle of a crisis, and they're surprised that their insurance company is suddenly getting in the way of their care.
Joe, why would the obstacles, I mean, insurance companies put up obstacles all the time. I've fought insurance companies for 40 years as an attorney. I used to represent insurance companies and then turned around and knew how to sue them. But why is it that in the mental health field, it's even worse when it comes to getting cooperation from insurance companies?
Well, at some level, you'd have to ask the health insurance companies why they make right. it just a little bit harder when it comes to mental health. I think some of the reasons are that specialists in mental health often stay outside of the network because they can meet their patients' needs. They don't have to deal with the challenges of becoming part of the network for the insurance company. The reimbursement rates are low, and the interference with their determining what care is appropriate for their patient is just too high. So that limits the number of clinicians who are available when you sign up for your health care.
So let's just talk about some of the nuts and bolts. And a lot of this, I will tell you, if you go to Joe's website, covermymentalhealth.org, it's a really user-friendly click on what do you do when this happens? What do you do next? How do you have a complaint? How do you do an appeal? How do you document things? And it's very, very clear on how to do these things. And I would highly recommend if you have any issues with healthcare coverage, mental health or otherwise, that you go onto his website because it's extremely helpful. So let's just say that you or your family member has an issue and you look and there's no available clinician, say, for treating, let's say, an eating disorder. And, you know, everyone is busy and there's no available clinicians at all in a year's time or something like that. What is it that you advocate for people to do?
Sure. The first thing that we focus on with our website, covermymentalhealth.org, is encouragement. Encouragement that you don't have to take no for an answer, and encouragement that your expectation of being able to access a clinician is very reasonable. So if you have a heart issue or a concern with, say, cancer, or you just don't know what's a matter, it's completely reasonable to expect that your insurance company is going to provide you access to a competent clinician. It's exactly the same when it comes to mental health, and certainly when it comes to specific challenges like eating disorders. That's just a very reasonable expectation.
So if the insurance company is saying, you know, you're calling and you're not getting what you want, what are the steps that you take with the insurance company?
So it's the insurance company's responsibility. It's their commitment under the contract, the health insurance policy, to provide you access to the clinicians who can help you. So that's their responsibility. It's your responsibility to look in the network directory. That's a directory of all the available clinicians. It should be on the website, or maybe you can call a customer service rep, and you use one of those resources to look for a clinician who is trained in, for example, eating disorder care. And so one of the resources that you can find on our website is a worksheet that you can use to document that you've done your homework. So you would document that you've looked in the network directory, you've looked and found clinicians who say they have experience with and practice taking care of people with eating disorders, and you've made phone calls to try to determine, can I get an appointment? And you have learned that some of the names in the directory are for clinicians who actually aren't in the network. Maybe they were never in the network, or maybe they can offer you an appointment, but it's sometime next year. Or it turns out that they're not taking new patients. So the worksheet gives you the ability to document that you have done your homework. So the insurance company did their part. You think they put together a directory. You've looked into it, and you cannot find a clinician who is nearby, available soon, and can take care of you. So we recommend then that you use this worksheet to contact the insurance company and say, in effect, I've done my homework and now I need to ask you to do yours. Either find me a clinician who is in network who for some reason I haven't been able to find, or agree that you will pay for someone who is not in the network who can get me the care that I need.
Are they required to do that? Are they required to find you someone who's suitable to handle your issue that's out of network?
So it's a great question. And the answer as a general matter is yes. And the laws in Illinois have become stronger in recent years, requiring that insurance companies have more robust, which is to say appropriate networks of clinicians to be able to meet your need. But just on a common sense basis, of course, if you buy health insurance and you expect that any sort of health need that you might have is going to be met, it's just a reasonable expectation of getting what you paid for.
Exactly. Joe Feldman, let's talk a little bit about this event that's coming up this Wednesday.
Sure. So NAMI of Cook County and North Suburban have asked me to come in and give an overview of the resources that are available on covermymentalhealth.org. And I'll be talking about the expectations that we all have of our health insurance companies, and then what happens when some of those expectations aren't met when it comes to health, mental health and substance use disorder care. Obstacles like the one we've been talking about, when you can't find a clinician who's in your network. Obstacles like when prior authorization isn't happening as it should, or when you have received a denial that your care is not medically necessary, which is one that that many people encounter, and the challenge of just trying to navigate complex processes within insurance companies. So we'll talk about those different obstacles and then resources on our website that you can use to overcome those obstacles.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things you just mentioned. And again, maybe you don't have an issue right now, but my guess is that someone, you or someone in your future, you know, God forbid, you're going to get sick, you're going to have a diagnosis, and you're going to want some sort of procedure or some sort of medicine that is not, your insurance company is going to deny you because it's not medically necessary. And so we're going to learn a little bit about the tactics that you can take and how to deal with the insurance companies and get the result that you're entitled to. We're here with Joe Feldman. He is with this great organization, covermymentalhealth.org. It's a non-for-profit. It's free. You go on. It helps you deal with insurance carriers who are not honoring their obligation to you in the mental health field, but also it's applicable to just general health insurance. And so let's talk a little bit about this issue of when do you see insurers in the field of mental health, let's say, deny coverage? What are the kind of common areas where you see denials that are wrongful denials?
So there's a lot of different examples. I can mention a couple where a particular kind of medication was the right treatment plan for the patient, and the insurance company said, no, we're not going to pay for that. And a clinician used our medical necessity letters to document that actually, yes, this is a medication that's appropriate. One was for an individual who had a substance use disorder and had tried a number of different medications and treatments, and none of them was working. And this clinician determined that a long-acting injectable was going to be the right course of treatment for this individual. And the insurance company said no. And so one of the resources on our website is a document called a medical necessity letter. And we have a template there that a clinician can use to document that the treatment, in fact, is medically necessary. They used that letter to explain their decision-making, and the insurance company then agreed to cover this long-acting injectable.
Why does an insurance, I know I'm asking you things that you can't step into the shoes of an insurance carrier, and in the words of Ralph Nader, a corporation does not have a conscience. But why does an insurance carrier make a decision that they're not going to give you this medicine, but they are going to give you this one? Is it just a matter of dollars, or is it a matter of bureaucratic incompetence? What is it?
So it's probably a lot of different reasons. And insurance companies will say, for example, that we want to make sure that the care is absolutely required, and we want to make sure that there's not fraud involved. But I think that putting up a speed bump along the way, it just avoids paying claims.
And yeah, there's, right.
It's a very, very low percentage of individuals who don't take no for an answer. And the whole point of Cover My Mental Health is to encourage individuals that they shouldn't take no for an answer, and they should use our resources and work with their clinicians to push back on those speed bumps so that they can get access to the care that they have paid for and that they need.
And I will add to it that, you know, at a time where you need it the most, you know, this is the most egregious of violations. You know, you have a family member, or you're going through a mental health crisis. Your child is you know, threatening to commit suicide. You know, this is a time where you're fighting so many different things that are life and death. The last place you want to fight is your carrier. So some people just pay it themselves, right? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, so that's
or they don't get the treatment.
Right. So most likely people who are getting a denial of not medically necessary are just not going to get the treatment at all. They don't have the means to pay for the coverage or pay for the treatment and then deal with the insurance company later. It's also extremely difficult to push back on an insurance company from a litigation perspective. Another example where a not medically necessary denial was overcome was a case in Ohio where an adolescent was in a psychiatric program, one of the top ones in the country, a very complex diagnosis, and the insurance company said that your days of approved coverage are over and you're going to have to return home with no more treatment. And the clinician who was in charge of this patient wrote a letter of medical necessity documenting that the insurance company had gotten it wrong, and the insurance company reversed their decision and covered the care so that this individual could complete their course of treatment on an inpatient level until they were ready to transition to a lower level of care.
Which could have saved the child's life.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And so I feel like there should be some sort of list of what is medically necessary or what's acceptable in certain situations.
So there is.
There is. Okay.
There is. So many organizations of clinicians publish what's called generally accepted standards. LOCUS is the acronym for one. ASAM is another. The American Psychiatric Association publishes guidelines that describe the state of clinical knowledge and their specification of what care is according to the standards of their practice. And those are the standards that clinicians are taught when they go through their training and as they go through their practice. So medical necessity is the legal term that shows up in a health insurance policy. So it sounds like a clinical term, medical necessity, but it's actually a legal term. What clinicians are taught is what are generally accepted standards. And so when we talk about a medical necessity letter, the idea is for the clinician to document that they are trained and competent to make decisions about the patient's care, to apply generally accepted standards, which is what they're trained in, and to assert that those decisions are aligned with what is medically necessary. You could say, take the space out from between a legal definition and a clinical definition so the patient gets the care they need.
So I have a texter who says, you know, I'm just going to pare it down, but it's almost impossible to find psych treatment in a certain county. So we talked about this earlier on. When you deal with an insurance company and you have to assert yourself and you have to say, listen, you made a contract with me to provide certain care. There are no providers that are close to me who are available and who are qualified in network. You're going to have to help me get somebody outside of network. What are your tips on how to deal with them? Is this something that you should be documenting in emails? Should you be getting names of people that you're dealing with? Should you be firm? Should you be nice? Like, how do you recommend people treat some of the workers?
Sure. So just going back to the example I described before where we were discussing someone looking for a specialist with eating disorder care. So I described a worksheet that you can download from our website. So let's say you've been looking for someone who can treat an eating disorder, and you've made phone calls, and you've got a worksheet that's full of names you've contacted, and you've come up short. So the first step would be to call the insurance company and say, I've done my homework, and now I need your help finding a clinician who's in network. And if they say no, we're not going to do that, or you're just going to have to deal with it, or you're going to have to go out of network and pay for it yourself. The next thing to do is to say, I want to file a formal insurer complaint for a quality of care failure. So insurance companies can receive these formal complaints directly. So it's not an appeal, and it's also not a complaint that you're filing with a regulator like the Illinois Department of Insurance. Those are different steps that might be taken later. A formal insurance complaint gets the insurance company's attention in a way that just turns out to be very different than any other steps. And so that's the next recommended step that we support. And you can find information on our website about what to say and a form letter that you can use to follow up in writing with the formal complaint that you've filed.
And to get organized, I mean, imagine that when you are going through this, you are upset for yourself, upset for your family, but now's the time to get organized. When you have all this documentation that you need to fill out, you need to keep it, you know, straight. And I think a lot of people, when I give advice to people, you know, that call in, you know, they say, well, I talked to this person on the phone. Well, you know, some of this has to be documented, has to be in writing, because at the next stage and the next step, you're going to have to prove that you actually did this and submitted it.
Right. It's always helpful to write down the date of the call, who you spoke with. One of the things that I learned to do when I've been dealing with health insurance challenges is to ask the person for their employee badge number. And what I found is sometimes they'll say, well, we don't actually give that out. And what I've come to learn is that they actually will, and just to politely wait for them to provide you with that number. And then to write down what it is that you asked for, what it is that they said they would or wouldn't do, and to just be clear in your notes about what the next steps are that have been agreed. Those are really important notes that can be used later on.
What is your advice about buying health insurance if you have a choice? I mean, is there a place? I mean, you probably know the insurance carriers that push back all the time, and you probably know the ones that have bad reputations and good reputations. And we don't know those things until, unfortunately, it's too late. So how do you, if you have a choice, and a lot of times you don't, when you're getting health insurance through your employer, let's say, how do you pick a good insurer?
Sure. So when people ask me which insurers are more difficult or more challenging or easier to work with, I have to say I really don't have one bit of advice there that can be really helpful. What I've encountered in talking to literally hundreds and hundreds of clinicians and patients and families is that all insurance companies may behave in a way that's surprising and not in a good way. So it's the advice that I would give is really about affordability. So one of the biggest decisions that someone has is how much of a deductible are they going to accept when they buy their health insurance? And if the deductible is high, meaning that you'll be obligated to pay for the first, say, $500 or $100 or maybe even a larger number, your insurance premium is going to be lower. And so the temptation would be to believe I can afford that better. But it could be that the first time you get you need care, that claim is going to cost you more than you could afford. So that's really an important step.
Look at the long term as opposed to the short term. Joe Feldman, thank you so much for joining us. Your organization, covermymentalhealth.org. Everyone should go on the website and tell us very quickly about this event on Wednesday night.
So Wednesday night, 6 p.m. in Wilmette. The venue is the First Congregational Church of Wilmette. The host organization is the NAMI affiliate for Cook County in the northern suburbs. And it's free of charge. And I'd look forward to folks coming to that event, and they can learn a little bit about what's on our website and ask questions to their heart's content.